You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
And here we go, MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition. I'm Dave Raymond. Wow, what a week. The Rangers making a big move in the division and looking for help in some unusual spots. Houston Astros coming off their wildest week in memory, but they hit the road where they have really struggled. In Seattle, we talk about the makings of a closer and help for a bullpen. Oakland's prodigal son, Ron Washington, returns, and the Angels may be hitting the most critical stretch of their season this week. That and more, American League West edition of MLB.com. With Brian McTaggart and B-Tags, man, I mean, you know, I go like a week without talking to you. I don't even know if it's a week. And so much has happened, like four walk-off wins, a no-hitter. You know, Jed Lowry gets injured. That could happen anytime. How do you sum up the last week for this Astros organization?
Yeah, it's been a really an amazing week. A homestand where they have four walk-off wins and a no-hitter, and then they lose a game in there where they were held to one hit and almost got no hit themselves. And then on Saturday they had Craig Biggio Hall of Fame Day, so they capped it with the walk-off win Sunday. Just a magical homestand, and it was the kind of week where you start to think maybe this team has a little some kind of magic going, or I mean, winning games you're not supposed to win, and you just start to think that maybe this was just meant to be, that the Astros are going to make the playoffs. Now they have a lot of work left to be done, but certainly they're going to have to start playing better on the road. But they just an amazing week all the way around.
And all of it, of course, in recognition of your 28th birthday, I think, that last week, right?
Yeah, if they turn back the clock to 1982, maybe.
The pitching has been awesome, though. You've talked about it or tweeted about it certainly plenty, especially since, and I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but the Scott Kazmir trade, man, we're talking a stretch now of nearly 30 games with an ERA of well under 3. I mean, it's just kind of unheard of.
Yeah, the starting pitching was good, and they got Kazmir, and of course, having Kazmir in the rotation helps. But ever since they got Kazmir, you know, Scott Feldman has pitched very well, and McCullers has had the one bad start, but otherwise has pitched pretty well. So, the last month, and since they got Kazmir, the team ERA is, I think, a run better. So it's been pretty amazing. But if you look at the 19 games, ending with the Monday game against the Yankees, their team ERA in those 19 games is 2.25, and they have a losing record. They're 9-10. That's because they're only hitting .201 in that span. And even though they had the exciting homestand and the four walk-off wins, I mean, they really had to scratch and claw for everything. And just offensively, they're just they're getting some big hits late in games, but nothing comes easy offensively. Every one of their games is tight. It seems like every game is a one-run game, and pitching's really just keeping them in the top of the division right now, because offensively they're really, really having trouble.
Well, that's a stunning number. I guess I might not have guessed that, the losing record, a 9-10 record in that stretch. And I think people are aware that the offense has that vulnerability, right? I mean, it has the ability to do great things, but it's vulnerable. I mean, it can get shut down on occasion. To me, that's concerning. I just feel like, especially when you start talking about the potential of a postseason, that can be kind of concerning. But the other piece of that is, and it's sometimes not as evident, is what's the toll on the bullpen? And so I'll just kind of throw that out there. Yes, those numbers are great and sometimes not great with the .201 batting average, but can you characterize the workload that's been placed on the bullpen to this point? I guess I'm just kind of asking out of curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty comfortable with the bullpen. They do have quite a few off days here in the next few weeks. They have one coming up later this week. So, and then rosters are expanded, as you know, on Monday, and they'll bring in a couple of relievers right off the bat. Most of the call-ups won't come until their minor league teams are done with the playoffs, because it looks like their top four clubs could make the playoffs in the minor league. So, but with as well as the starting pitching's going, there's really I think they're in pretty good shape with the bullpen, and they're going with six starters, so they are a man short where they would like to be in the bullpen right now. since they called up McCullers. He was their sixth starter. But with the off days and with rosters expanding at the beginning of the month, I don't think they have any worries about the usage of the bullpen at this point.
Okay, so no worries there. And a guy like Fiers puts together his no-hit masterpiece, during the weekend. And that was one where I was checking in on that one, Brian, and I don't know, it got to be maybe seventh inning or so, and I saw that pitch count was fairly elevated, I want to say around 110 or so. And I know there was activity out in the bullpen, and I thought, well, yeah, they're probably going to have to go to the pen. It's not likely, and I'll be honest with you, I feel really bad about it. I kind of left the game, and only to find out that he completed it. And so I'm curious, how far did they have to stretch him? What was his reaction afterwards?
Yeah, he was kind of a no-hitter that snuck up on you because you realize through five innings or so, he's throwing a no-hitter and the pitch count is 70s or 80s. And then after seven innings, he's sitting at 102 pitches. And at that point, I looked up his career-high pitch count, and it was 113. So you're like, well, he's going to be stretched out longer than he's ever been. And, yeah, the bullpen was stirring a little bit. But, after he pitched the ninth, and I think he's at 120 pitches, and then – why not throw him out there for the ninth inning and he closed it out with a strikeout and again they have a six man rotation and they have an off day after that, so Fiers is going to get more than a week off before his next start. So it's not like they needed him to come back 5 days later with the depth they have pitching wise. But it was just one of those no hitters that sneaks up on you because you think he's not going to get it just because he's not going to finish it. And next thing you know, you're in the eighth, and he comes out to the ninth. You're like, oh, boy. And next thing you know, he's throwing his glove in the air and getting to shake hands with Nolan Ryan in the dugout, who's thrown more no-hitters than anybody. It was really a cool moment. And, everyone talks about the trade they made with the Brewers. They call it it's been called the Carlos Gomez trade. Well, now it's called the Mike Fiers trade because Fiers has pitched really well, and Gomez has really struggled at the plate since he's come to Houston.
See how the Rangers kind of making that move again, it feels. And this is the way the season goes, right? You make a little move, maybe you hover for a little while, but they seem to be on that push at the moment. And, a lot of things kind of working for them at the moment. But I see that they're still making moves in the margin as well. The Drew Stubbs move, kind of an interesting one. How do they see Drew Stubbs contributing, let's say, in September?
Well, David, as you know, Josh Hamilton's on the disabled list, and it's unlikely that they're going to get Leonis Martin back in September because he has a broken bone in his hand. So they want some outfield depth, and Drew Stubbs is a left-handed hitter who can run all three outfield positions. There's a spot on the 40-man form in September. They need outfield depth because of Hamilton and Martin, and Drew Stubbs is available, so they're going to give him a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, look, sometimes you're in a position where you just take what is available. And I don't mean to in any way diminish Drew Stubbs. There have been a lot of teams that have really liked him, including the team at the top of the division right now that drafted him in 2003 but then did not sign him. It would be very ironic, of course, if Stubbs ended up being the difference maker in this pennant race. But I just wonder if there's anything in particular that they liked about Drew Stubbs, or if it was just one of those things like, here's a guy who, is available and potentially could help.
Well, I think he's a guy who could help as a fourth or fifth outfielder in September. I mean, the guy at one time was expected to be he was a first-round pick, eighth overall in 2006. The Reds thought he was going to be a real superstar. He had some decent years in Cincinnati, nothing overwhelming. Strikes out a lot, doesn't have a high on-base percentage. He has great speed, sold 20 bases in Colorado last year for them. Run a little bit, play the outfield. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to make a difference maker, but it's a guy who might be able to help you win one or two games down the stretch.
Well, that'd be a great contribution if he was able to pull that off, of course. They went out and they got Venable. We talked about that a little bit last week. And I don't know. I don't know if it's just magnified because of the time of year and you're a guy that the team went out and got after the trade deadline sort of thing. But you know, it's just kind of amazing to me how those situations play out. Here he is, you know, and contributing huge in a win. You could, in a way, you talk about the difference in a win or two down the stretch, maybe for Drew Stubbs, if he could pull it off. Well, Venable, to me, he's already gotten at least one win under the belt, right? I mean, he's been worth a victory.
Yeah, I mean, it's August, you know, every team's had injuries, every team has a hole or two they're trying to plug down the stretch. And, you know, the other thing, Dave, is when you get in September, it's a different baseball game. I mean, you're playing with up to 40 players, so, you know, for 5 months, you want to have the best 25-man roster. You know, come September, you want to have the best 40-man roster. You know, you need that third catcher, you need that extra left-hander reliever in the bullpen, you need a couple of right-handers, and you need speed off the bench, and you know, if you can find a bat off the bench, you know, come up there and pinch hit for you, you know, that helps too. So it's all about, you know, making sure you have a full battalion of players come September when the roster is expanded.
Well, to that end, TR, you know, have you talked to Jeff Fenster a little bit about his plans? I mean, here he is, first-year manager and in this spot, and now you know, you have to make those kind of decisions and piece those things together. I think it's just a tough balance. You know, do you bring up a bunch of guys and create distractions? Do you just bring up a couple? What's his thinking?
Well, I think that you got to bring up as many players as you feel that can help you. I mean, you know, you get into a ball game that, you know, teams are going to start using situational relievers left and right all game long. You can see 8-9 relievers sometimes a game. It's the situation dictates it. See, you want to have a full roster. You know, you want to have a third catcher because, you know, the Rangers have two right-handed hitting catchers. You know, you get into a late inning and you're facing, I don't know, you know, say you're playing the Royals, you're going against Herrera, Davis, and Holland. You know, you're going to want some left-handed bats off the bench. So, you know, it's all about getting as many players as possible that can help you win ball games in September. I think that's more important than, you know, any distractions or too many guys in the clubhouse.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what he does. You know, I don't want to say a quick trip to Detroit. It was a long trip to Detroit, but a short road trip in general, just the four games. The team takes 3 out of 4 there and continues what has been really an awesome season on the road. They have played so well on the road. They have not really played that great at home, though. Any sense as to why that might be?
Well, they've played much better lately at home. They've played a whole lot better, and I think they feel a whole lot more confident. I think they've won like 10 out of the last 11 or something really impressive at home. So I think that part is over. And, you know, they got, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but most of the games at home going down the stretch. So, you know, they got a big series this week with Toronto and Baltimore. So, you know, this is going to be a big homestand. Two teams. You know, we all know Toronto's been playing very well. Baltimore's kind of hanging in there. They've been up and down, kind of like the Rangers. This is a big homestand here. They've played well at home lately. They've played well at home on the last homestand, so they need to continue that. You know, the Blue Jays are going to be tough, and so are the Orioles.
Alden, I'm not sure where to start. Here's this Angels team that, you know, looked like maybe it was turning the corner in the second half, going to make a run at this division title. And, man, have they fallen on hard times. What's going on? I mean, I'm seeing closed-door meetings. I'm seeing frustration after the game and dugouts and guys with the quotes of frustration in the media. Is this thing unraveling?
Well, it's really starting to, Dave. And, look, you hate to say anything is do or die or must win in baseball because the games keep coming. But they're starting off a 9-game road trip on Tuesday where the three opponents that they'll face are a combined 30 games below 500. When they get done with that road trip, they go back home for a 9-game homestand, and their opponents will be a combined 29 games over 500. So if you just look at the schedule from that perspective, you got to think this is a trip where the Angels really have to get something going here. And you remember those first 3 months when they were at 500 17 different times in the starting rotation? Was pitching well, and we kept wondering, well, what's going to happen when the pitching is no longer there for them? Well, this is what's happening. The Angels have scored the fewest runs in the major leagues and have by far the lowest OPS in the month of August. And now their starting rotation is starting to come down to earth a little bit, and now we're starting to see what happens with that. The Angels are in a really bad way right now. They're out of wild card contention, a game and a half behind the Texas Rangers, which nobody would have could have possibly foreseen about a month ago. And they're just not swinging it right now. They have to find a way to get it going somehow. And, you know, everybody keeps thinking about that stretch where they won 17 out of 20 games. It was such an uplifting stretch because they were a juggernaut offensively for that 20-game stretch. And now, as the days roll by, as the calendar keeps stretching into September, that 17 for 20 stretch is looking more and more like a mirage, Dave.
Right, right. It looks like that fun little solar flare right in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, I think what we saw in the first 3 months and what we're seeing now, those are all too consistent. I'm seeing via Twitter that you're reporting Giovatella on the disabled list. Now, you know, I guess it depends on when you catch me. I might say, oh, okay. Right now, I guess I might be asking you, what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a snapshot of where the Angels are is just how big a deal it is that they're losing Johnny Giovatella on the disabled list. And that's nothing against Johnny Giovatella, but, you know, he came into the year, the Angels hoping that, you know, maybe he would win a job at second base, maybe hit at the bottom of their lineup and just fill in, you know, with Howie Kendrick gone. But now with the offense struggling, Johnny Giovatella is a huge piece. I mean, he's the only one who's really been hitting in August. He was a guy that they were able to, you know, somewhat comfortably plug into that leadoff spot, which allowed Mike Trout to bat third. But, you know, he's been fighting up, you know, the team's calling it right now just a personal medical condition. He missed the entire 3-game series against the Blue Jays over the weekend. And on Tuesday, the Angels just decided that they placed him on the DL because it seemed like it's not really getting any better. At the very least, it seems like he's still going to need a couple of days. So they need the roster spot. It looks like Grant Green's going to play second base every day, which is kind of what he's been trying to do. What the role he's been searching for his entire career. I mean, who knows how long Giovatella will be out. I can't imagine this will be more than a 2-week thing, but this is a big 2 weeks for the team. I mean, this is when they really need to get going. They're on a slippery slope here. They're losing ground. And the last thing they needed to do was to, you know, be without one of the few productive players that they've had. And, you know, it's just another sign, Dave, that they just can't catch a break right now.
Okay, all that said, though, Alden, they picked up a game or half a game yesterday by not playing. That might be their best strategy these days, but they picked up a half game yesterday. And, yes, they are currently third in the division. The Rangers have made a move. But, you know, I feel like there's a lot yet to be decided in this division. Astros are proving with each passing day to be, you know, a legitimate contender, but they struggle on the road. Rangers are far from perfect, but playing maybe the best baseball of the three teams right now on a daily basis. I go back, though, to the history with this Angels team. I go back to Socha, you know, having been there year after year in this position, guys like Pujols and their experience. How much of that, you know, veteran presence is still being felt and still a legitimate factor, and how much of this sort of inescapable panic, if you will, is overtaking that?
I think that's a big thing, Dave. And I think that Mike Socha's greatest strength as a manager is that he is the same all the time. And what I mean by that is if the team is winning 17 out of 20, or if it's in the kind of rut that it is in right now, he doesn't change. He sees every game as just one game. He doesn't see this as a 9-game road trip. He sees it as Tuesday's game. And he's able to just compartmentalize things like that. And that is so important for throughout the course of a baseball season because there's so many highs and lows. And at least Socha never gives off the presence that they're on a roller coaster ride. He is the same way all the time. And Albert Pujols is the same way all the time. Houston Street, who could get a little bit emotional at times, but he is the same way all the time. That is so crucial in a baseball season, Dave, because it's just so long and there are so many highs and lows. And look, you're right. I mean, they're right in the thick of it. I mean, with this new playoff format, you hate you know, you really want to avoid that do or die wild card game. But, you know, the more the season goes on, the more and more it seems like the Angels may have to settle for something like that. But, I mean, look, they have some good signs. Jared Weaver, who's pitching on Tuesday, has looked pretty good since he came back from being on the DL with inflammation on his left hip. That's been a good sign, especially with C.J. Wilson out for the year. They still have Houston Street and Joe Smith in the back end of the bullpen, capable of holding leads. They just haven't had any leads to hold. And their offense, I mean, you look at the raw numbers, and it's brutal. But I'll tell you what, they've had for pretty much the entire year the lowest batting average on balls in play. And that's never an end-all, be-all that things are going to turn around. But they're not really striking out a lot, and they haven't really had much luck with the balls that they have put in play. So maybe at some point that will start to turn around. And it's, if it seems like I'm grasping at straws here, Dave, maybe I am a little bit. But the truth of the matter is they have talent on this team, and they're right within striking distance. They just need to stop the bleeding, though, and this is the road trip where it has to happen.
I feel like, Greg, that in the last week it is finally, for lack of a, I guess, a better word or definition of the exact moment, it's come to a head. And, you know, early in the season when this team struggled, we kept thinking, like, geez, if Cano and this offense could just kind of get it together, maybe we'd see this thing take off. The reality is, even had the offense taken off early in the season, this bullpen has been a little shaky. It continued to be shaky, and now it's just a disaster. The offense is pretty good right now, but this bullpen, it just, I think whether you're hitting or not hitting, you can't succeed if you can't close out games.
Yeah, you have to get a pretty darn good lead if you got a pen in the situation they're in right now. And it's unfortunate because this is a bullpen that was, you know, we've said it over and over, it was the lowest ERA in baseball a year ago at 2.59. And they had a group, they were eight deep, they were solid. You know, they had some young power arms and a lot of things going right. And this year it's just all those things going wrong. And the closer they had, the shutdown closer they had last year, that Fernando Rodney set a franchise record with 48 saves last year, 48 out of 51, and was an all-star and every bit deserving of that. I mean, he wasn't always perfect, but he almost always made the save. He made things interesting a lot, but he got it done. And this year, he just didn't, and it didn't work. And it kind of trickled down from there. When you don't have that shutdown closer, things trickle down, and your setup kid, the young kid, Carson Smith, becomes a closer, and he's kind of run into more struggles in that role, and the guys behind him not fitting in as well, and they dealt some guys. All those things have added up. It's just kind of been rough, and as you said, did kind of come to a head this week, and they finally cut the ties with Fernando Rodney and designated him for assignment. So that was kind of the end of the line with that, and now they're left with really a young group and kind of searching for, you know, who's going to finish up the games and who's going to be the setup guys and kind of shuffling some pieces here as we head down the stretch.
Yeah, and I thought really early, and I'm kind of digging around in my memory banks here, but one of our first podcasts when the season got started, we talked about a game, I want to say it was in Oakland, and McClendon had used Fernando Rodney maybe five outs or something and brought him in not exactly your traditional closer situation. It didn't work out that day, but we talked at length about it. I loved it. I like the fact sometimes that a manager is able to think outside the box and not be, you know, strictly tied to those old, I guess, whatever you want to call them, those old rules that we've used over the years. But it was kind of like the beginning of the end. Right then, because it didn't work out, and then there was a sense from that point forward, it was just never right.
Yeah, and I would predate that to it not working out well, but I mean that was a move he made. I remember that game too, and he went with Fernando earlier, and came in with Smith later, and Carson pitched well, and it had been lights out as a closer, but Fernando, or excuse me, Lloyd, very reluctant to go to him as a closer, and for reasons that we're seeing now, you know, Carson's a really talented right-hander and is death on right-handed hitters. And when they could use him, pick his spots, you know, he's virtually unhittable. I mean, his ERA, his numbers, his his opponent's batting average were minuscule. But when you go into a closer role, you get to the ninth, and that's, as you say, the traditional spot. You get in the ninth, doesn't matter who's coming up on the other team, you come with your closer. You got the lead, you bring your closer in. They got a couple lefties, you bring your closer in. Well, he's had trouble in that situation, and he's also had trouble, you know, maybe with the workload and kind of the pressure situation things. Since I think July 1st, his ERA is up over, it's about 5.5. The Mariners combination, I'm not going to lay it all on Carson Smith because it's certainly not the situation. It was interesting last night. They put Carson in the seventh inning, brought him in two outs in the seventh. He got the last out of the seventh, zipped through the eighth in order. Four batters, four ground ball outs. They were able to match him up with the guys they wanted and came in with Tom Wilhelmsen in the closer role. Tom hadn't been in a traditional closer role since 2013, a couple years ago, and he came in and shut him down in the ninth. So that was a combo that worked last night, and I think we might see that a little more going forward. But they kind of want to take the pressure off Carson. He is a rookie. There's not a lot of rookie closers in baseball. It's a pressure-filled situation, and it is a situation where you can't match up quite as well. You just bring him in. That's kind of the interesting thing going forward. I think with that pen, is Wilhelmsen going to pick up some of that duties? Are they going to go back to Carson? I know Lloyd has said all along, you don't want to yo-yo back and forth with your closer. You don't want to get in a situation where you're going one day with one guy and saying, hey, we'll stay with this, and then he runs into some trouble, and you go back to the other guy, and he gets into some trouble, you go back to the other. He wants to have a guy that he can count on. So it's pretty interesting to me that he went to Wilhelmsen yesterday. He wasn't ready to commit to anything longer than that, but we will be curious to see how that plays out.
Let's see. This week, let's go ahead and start off the field, kind of off the field, on the field, with this club. News that Ron Washington is back in uniform. Wash as the new third base coach. Mike Gallego let go, and I know he's been a stalwart in the organization for a while. Kind of an interesting move. What can you tell us?
It was, especially the timing of the move. I think this is a move that was probably expected at the end of the season. You know, the team brought in Wash in May to just kind of help out with the infielders, particularly Marcus Semien. I think it's been well documented, all of his errors this season. He leads the majors with 31. So Wash was brought in, he's been credited with, tutoring so many guys in the past, guys like Eric Chavez, Miguel Tejada. I think the A's recognized, he was available and thought, he could be a big help to the organization. So they brought him in at that time. And I think at that time, Gallego, acknowledged, he thought, he could have been let go right then and there. Why have two guys working with infielders doing kind of the same things with the same players? And yesterday, when they did let Gallego go, Bob Melvin said, it was a little uncomfortable for him, for everyone involved, just the situation just wasn't really working out. And, it is a hard ordeal when you have, roles that are overlapping. And I mean, Wash and Gallego, they're both great guys, but, it's really meant for one person's job and for them to kind of be doing the same things and, different methods, trying to do different things with the same guy. It just really wasn't working out, and this was the direction that they were probably going to be going in the offseason anyway. And, over the weekend they've had a lot of base running snafus this year, but several of them came this weekend, and I think things just kind of came to a head, and I think they just felt it was the right time, going forward. Even though there are only 5 weeks left in the season, you think, well, why not just write them out? But I think it comes down to maybe just the whole uncomfortable feelings involved in the whole situation. And, I mean, also, you look at, they've had a lot of issues this season. Among them, they've had 19 runners thrown out at home plate, tied, I believe, for most in the majors. So, you look at that, and Melvin said, you try to look at some of the issues and address them, and this was one of them. And she doesn't want to, put all the blame on Gallego, but, sometimes there has to be that guy. And Gallego said, he's glad it was him and not anyone else. And I think it was a hard decision for everyone in the organization, just because Gallego has been such a fixture in the franchise, as a player, and as a coach, and I know everyone wishes him well. And this is something that hasn't been an issue in years past. He is regarded as a great third base coach, but nothing's really been going right for this team this year. And unfortunately, he was one of those guys that had to take some fall for it. And Wash, of course, you look at the success he's had, not just with the A's in the past as a third base coach, but then went on, to do what he did with the Rangers. So, they knew they had the luxury of having him in-house already, and it kind of made for an easy transition. And you saw even yesterday already, he's excited to be back in the dugout, and I think that enthusiasm really rubs off on the players, and that's the type of, your demeanor you need in the dugout, especially this time of year with a team that's out of contention. You need that energy right now.